Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I really enjoy interviewing NFL players, especially with foundations that are giving back to the community, trying to give them a platform to talk about the great things that they're doing. So I'm excited to welcome the program, two-time Pro Bowler from the St. Louis Rams, Davin Joseph. Davin, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
Well, we're doing fantastic, and as I told you, I said you'll brighten my day for sure after all the type of weather we're dealing with right now, Davin, in Pittsburgh, where we're getting snow in late April, and you said in Tampa it's not the best, but so not snow, but like flurries, and we're like, whoa, what happened to the 75 degree weather we had last week? So it is what it is for sure, but yeah.
Definitely thought you guys were out of the woods, man. I thought it was going to be a short winter, and a little surprise, a little sneak attack, huh?
Yeah, a definite sneak attack, Davin, and it's kind of funny for sure. Now, tell me specifically why you started your foundation, and especially with all the different great things that you've done in the community as an NFL player. What is the reasoning?
You know, number one, I feel like it's my duty, you know, as an NFL player that, you know, it's my job to give back to my community. And so I was blessed enough to be in a locker room with a lot of guys that gave back. I was a rookie with Mike Allstott, with Dave Brooks, and then later on met Ward Dunn, who are all, you know, three very, very bright men and that were that run their own foundation for a very, very long time. Also Ryan Neese, that were all, you know, in love with giving back. And so, you know, it started with one event, then it ended up having two events, and then, you know, partnering with somebody to make it three events. And before you know it, I was like, you know, I kind of want to go out and do it on my own. And so I hooked up with a great friend of mine from high school. Her name is Angel Williams, and we started a nonprofit. And so going into year four and soon to be in year five, and now it's really getting fun. You know, been through ups and downs. You know, learn about the politics of the game, of course, the nonprofit game.
Yes, definitely.
Learn about, you know, the great work that's out there, the challenges still to be met. And so, you know, I love to fight. I love the challenge. And so one thing about an athlete is, you know, you tell a guy that he can't do something, and he'll do everything he can to prove you wrong. And so I feel like I'm bringing that same fight to the nonprofit game.
Well, it definitely seems like you are, and you saw from the opportunities of helping out in the community with a lot of people that were doing great with the Tampa Bay Bucks community and seeing how great it was giving back that you said, I got to do this myself. So tell me the premise of your foundation.
You know, we really started out with trying to help the youth, you know, giving back to the kids in the inner city, trying to give them opportunities to be successful, giving them the basics. And within doing that, you know, basically my cause chose me, and which we're fighting childhood hunger. And it seems like something that we shouldn't be fighting, especially in 2015 in America, but we really are. So I found out that I'm really serving a lot of kids on free and reduced lunch, and they fight every day because they're not guaranteed meals.
That's
so
unbelievable. Yeah.
It's kind of unbelievable, really. But it's our reality. And so we started off with a feeding program in which we were feeding football players, mental illness basketball players, soccer, and track and field participants at local high schools. And so it started off as a feeding program and it kind of just gives back and try to encourage kids, and now that it's a real need. And so we're looking to expand. We're looking to expand and really excited about the challenge and opportunity to do so.
Now, Davin, tell me specifically, like, when you finally got involved in this foundation and you came up with your idea, what you wanted to combat, again, children's hunger, what were you surprised to know that some of these kids are not getting meals every day? Was that a surprise to you, that, or did you have an idea about that happening in this country?
I had a general idea about it. but I didn't know that it was getting worse. You know, so it's kind of a thing you hear about free and reduced lunch kids, and so you automatically think, oh, well, they're eating at school, right? Well, you know, what about the days they're not at school? What about the summertime? You know, what about after school? You know, these kids are not eating, and it's a real hazard to their health. And so with a lot of student-athletes, one thing that I found out was that really they can't participate in sports because they can't eat.
Oh, my.
So it was just kind of one of those things where we kind of set it out as an incentive. It was saying that if you're going to be an athlete, at least you're going to be fed. And so now we're seeing that it's even more. So we need pre-practice snacks for these kids to eat, you know, before practice and after practice. You know, trying to supply them with backpacks for the weekends and things of that sort, and also trying to develop, you know, summertime program in which we can actually have, you know, reliable access to these kids during the week to give them meals to eat. And so it started off as kind of a request, and now you really find out the need. Well, I found out the need.
Well, and you're surprised by that need for sure. You say to yourself, wow, I never thought it was that much and how I'm really benefiting. Because as you talked about football players, if they don't have fuel for their bodies, they're not going to be able to perform on the field. And so you're going to see a lot of kids that are going to get hurt in games and also just not have the energy to be able to play sports for sure.
Exactly. And so we see kind of how 7-on-7s and camps and other stuff is just popping up all over the place. And we just don't want to forget about the fundamentals. We don't want to forget about the basics of, you know, having fuel, you know, before you go out and perform. And you want to give these kids the best opportunities. And so eating is part of it. You know, eating breakfast in the morning, you know, has a direct relationship with how kids perform in school academically. And I think it's the same thing with athletics. Reliable meals, good nutritious meals before they play is going to have a direct relation with how they perform on the field and stuff. So we want to see these kids succeed. We want to see them go on in life and be inspired and hopefully inspire their community to do well. Let's just give them some food.
When you talk about nutritious as well, sometimes they're eating, but they're not eating the right things, and it leads to obesity for some, and then others, it's a process where, you know, they're just not fueling their body, so lots of health problems can occur later on in life. So if you can teach them to eat nutritious meals, they're more and more going to see that importance throughout their lives, because they'll feel how they feel, not feel tired in school, they'll be able to answer more questions in school, they'll be happier to be there all day and have the energy to perform in the classroom and also on the field.
Oh, of course. Of course. You hit it right on the head with that one. And really, you see us as a nation, you know, getting more aware of the importance of the quality of food that we eat. And it's great. It's empowering. And so we want to make sure that our youth are learning the importance of nutritious meals and, you know, what's real food. And how to cook food and how to prepare food. And so it's great to see it coming from, you know, different perspectives, different avenues where kids are getting that exposure on TV, you know, in print, radio, whatever the case may be, and also, you know, face-to-face interactions within school and within their own neighborhood. And so it's good to see that, you know, as a nation, we're really taking this seriously.
Well, I believe it, because again, if people will stop having to go to the doctors so frequently when they're older and different things, if they are healthy, if they eat the right foods and exercise, all those things are so important in development. Davin, what events do you do throughout the year? Are there any new events coming up soon for your foundation? Tell us what specifically that kind of schedule every year, what you do.
This summer, we're really excited. We're in the works of partnering with D1, hopefully, fingers crossed, everything goes right, and providing some free physicals for kids within Hillsborough County, which is in Tampa, and also in South Florida in Broward-Dade County with a partnership through the city of Hollandale, hopefully, fingers crossed again, to provide free physicals. And that's, you know, in a relation of the health spectrum of kids, of course, getting physicals to be able to participate in sports, but also getting physicals so they know what's going on within their own bodies, and also learning about what's going on and what's important for them as they grow and mature. And I want to get parents involved, of course, and getting coaches involved, and of course, bring out kids and whatnot. But it's mainly for awareness. It's an educational piece also. Hopefully, they're going to have a little health care coming up. And so we haven't locked in any dates yet, but that's an event I'm really excited about coming this summer. Other than that, you know, it's the same old, same damage dream team stuff. You know, we have pregame meals coming up this year with football, so we're excited about that. We're looking into how we can make it better, how can we expand the program. And then, you know, we want to do a little something around Thanksgiving, want to do a little something around Christmas coming this year. But so, and of course, partner with other people in the community. So we're just looking to work.
Well, it seems like, Davin, once you retire from football, you really have something that with Davin's dream team and to really give back that you're excited about for sure, that you are already learning so much with the non-for-profit that life after football, you're going to be ready and prepared for it for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's the goal. You know, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and there's no doubt about that. Football, of course, it has been a blessing, and I love it. You know, and I will always be a fan of it, even, you know, after I retire. But, you know, this is really what I love to do, and really, at the end of the day, this is who I am.
Well, it definitely seems like it's who you are, and all the different accolades that you've received on the field and off the field, especially with the community, it's very humbling, I'm sure, Davin, with the amount of awards from the Ed Block Courage Award to different awards that you've received for helping and being a great role model for kids, I believe, in the NFL. It's great to look at seeing what you're able to do for sure.
Yeah, it is not really about me. It's about the work that my team has done. And so, of course, I get all the credit, you know, but the people that I work with, the people that I've partnered with in the past, really make everything possible. They're the people that really are up late or up early in the morning, maybe up all night, you know, working to make it happen. And so I've been blessed to have people that care just as much as I do, and they work just as hard as I do, maybe even harder some days, to make all these things happen. And so it's really about winning these awards to show that, you know, where I live, that people are doing great things.
Well, definitely, Davin, and you talk about your team and how important your team is for the success of your foundation. And you look at things in so many ways. It's right, like running a corporation in so many ways, that you need to have more than just yourself to have success and meet to get the donations that are needed, and also provide meals for kids. And now with the healthcare piece, all very, very important things, and trying to expand. Do you look to probably do it in the St. Louis community as well? Is that another goal of yours now playing with the Rams?
Yeah. And I think, you know, my main focus right now is within Tampa, but of course I'm trying to, you know, put some of the programs in other markets in conjunction with other players. And really, there's some guys in St. Louis that do outstanding work. I'm talking about outstanding work that, you know, they don't get the real credit. And so I'm just there not to, you know, reinvent the wheel, but it's more of just supporting what they do. And so, you know, the Davin's Dream Team is not a selfish organization. You know, we partner and we work with other organizations to help people. That's what we do at the end of the day. And so I'm not looking to roll out anything new in the St. Louis community, but it's more about helping guys that have things established.
Oh, that's great.
On making improvements in their own community. And so I'm all about that.
Well, Davin, that's fantastic, because again, what you've been able to do and helping your community and also St. Louis community with the different foundations, organizations that are doing great things there. Where's the best place we can find information on you, Davin, so that people can check out your the foundation, learn more about you and all that? Where's the best place to go?
I think the best thing right now is probably to follow the foundation at Davin's Dream Team, at Davin's Dream Team, or even go on the website, davinsdreamteam.org. And, you know, tons of information on there, ways to get in contact with me. My Twitter handle is davinjoseph75. And, you know, love sharing ideas. So tweet me DM me, whatever the case may be, and let's connect.
Well, definitely for sure, and good luck next season. I know you're encouraged by the growth of St. Louis with some of the wins last year, and I think that your team's developing into something really special next year, I think, for sure, with the how competitive you were.
The Rams, they are on their way to doing some special things, and so I'm excited.
Oh, that's great. Well, good luck next season, and thanks for calling, Davin. You're doing tremendous things.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
All right, take care. See you later. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back, the Total Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And the celebrities keep rolling on. And it's so interesting to talk to specific ones, especially the variety. And now we have a recording artist. So I'm so excited to welcome the program. Former Pussycat Doll recording artist Jessica Sutta. Jessica, thanks for calling, and I'm glad that you came on the Total Celebrity Show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. And Jessica, I'm sure when you look back at your career, you're like, "Wow, I never expected all this." Am I right? The notoriety and all the experiences you've had in your life.
Absolutely. I mean, it exceeded all my expectations, all my dreams. Like, it was crazy what happened with my career in the beginning until now. And yeah, it's amazing. It definitely makes you realize that dreams do come true, though.
And your dreams definitely did come true. So when you first started out as a child, did you want to be a performer? Did you want to perform when you were young?
Oh, my God. Since I came out of my mother's womb, I think. I think I just got out of it. You know, I remember at the age of 3, I did my first recital, and I was in a tutu with the light shining in my eyes, and I just loved it. I loved everything about it.
And it's something that was you, and probably in the classroom as well. You probably were entertaining as well and participating in class, right, in school, Mark.
Yeah, you couldn't get me to shut up. I loved performing, and I loved making people feel good, and I just had so much love with it and connecting with people in the audience on stage. I don't know. I think it's an amazing, amazing gift to have to be able to be on stage.
Oh, and definitely for sure. So from that process, when did you decide, like, kind of tell us that career when you said, okay, this is what I want to do. Did you go on to college, or did you from there go on to your dreams? Tell us specifically what happened there. Yeah.
I'll tell you the story. So I started doing music videos and commercials in Miami at age 14. My first music video was with Will Smith, Welcome to Miami.
Oh, that's one of my favorite videos. Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty grueling shoot. And it was 16. I had to actually go to school the next day. So I stayed up all night doing the video and went to class, which was like across the bay. So it worked out good for me. but then I did for the Miami Heat when I graduated high school, and then I did this soap opera called Ocean Avenue, where Megan Fox played my sister, and it was an amazing project. I saved all my money, and I just moved myself to L.A. I came out here to act, and I actually started dancing again, and my first job was a Pussycat Doll, and I fell in love with the choreographer, Robin Anson. She's like, cut your bangs. I want you to be in this group. You know, it's called the Pussycat Doll. They had just done Max, and I'm like, oh, it's such a cool concept. So, yeah, I came to the audition, and there was 300 girls, and there was 20 girls that were picked from that. And then a year after that, it went down to 6, and then that's the top group that you know. So
wow.
A pretty amazing journey with the Pussycat Dolls.
Well, it definitely seems like it was an amazing journey. And from that, gathering from that group and seeing how they were creating that group and stuff like that, and you had to audition in that process, and your roles were small, you know, in different things you were doing. How did you expect to make it? Did you think it was something that was going to happen?
I thought I was going to be acting. I thought I was going to be in another soap opera. You know, I was terrible acting on my part. That type of career. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would travel the world and dance and sing. And I was a singer, but I developed so much in the Pussycat Dolls, I didn't think that was going to be my career route, you know. And I just absolutely fell in love with the art of singing. So when I left the Pussycat Dolls, that's where the passion came in with my singing, and I started developing my voice. And yeah, now I feel like I'm in a whole different place. And I love singing. It's like you're able to to tell your truth through your voice, and it's such an amazing experience.
So let's back us up with the experience with the Pussycat Dolls, meaning specifically you just you learned to perform a lot from that, right? From experiences of traveling all over the world. What types of mentoring did you get from that opportunity? You know, you're picked from 300 or you saw tons of people auditioning and you get that opportunity and you're on that stage in front of tons of people and the training that you had to go through. Tell us a little bit about that, because a lot of people think, you know, once I make it or I'm close to making it, then basically I just live on my talent, right? It's not, I don't need to improve anymore. And that's not the case at all, is it?
No, that's not the case at all. You have to be working every single day because there's someone young and hungry moving out here from Midwest America to take your job. You know, you always have to keep on reinventing yourself. You know, I feel like I've been preparing for my career my whole life since I was three. So when I started with Pussycat Dolls, the label didn't really know what was going to happen. And then we got Soundcheck, and it was like an overnight success for us, especially in Europe. My life completely changed, and it was like, go. And it was 6 a.m. radio station to performance, to television show, to get on a plane, to go to another city. And that happened for about a year nonstop. And it just absolutely trained me into like being so focused and staying my A game when it came to being on stage, no matter how you felt, no matter if you were injured. I mean, it was like military. And I'm so grateful for that training because it definitely made me very centered now as a solo artist, you know.
Well, absolutely, because you're, you know, from going in a certain situation where you weren't the spotlight when you were working with the Miami Heat. You know, you were kind of the spotlight, but not to the point that you were the main show. And then you're a superstar in Europe. And you got to tell us about the fans in Europe. How crazy was it?
It was pretty crazy. Like, for them to be screaming your name, it's like you're brand fresh new into this whole fame world. And, you know, people are sleeping outside your hotel room and they have signs and, like, you're actually changing their life for doing something that you love to do. So it is so touching and an amazing thing to have fans. So, I mean, in the UK, that's basically who made the Pussycat Dolls. I think that's what gave us the strength to really push and conquer the world, because there are amazing fans there.
Interesting. And that's the thing that people forget, is that if you don't make it in the United States at first, you make it in Europe, you're going to be set, or in any of these countries, because guess what? They're just like the U.S. They're hungry for music. They love music, and they find their favorite artists, and then, wow. And I think when you would go and get ushered into different interviews or different meetings, and you go to a radio station to promote the event that night, you're like, wow, this is just amazing. And did you kind of take everything in, Jessica? Did you try to kind of like take everything in and really study and understand this, because you knew at one point in time it would continue in your career and you have to prepare for this, because at one point you might be a solo artist? If you study group bands and bands and groups, they do split up at times. They do kind of go on their own careers. Did you research and understand the history of music in a lot of ways? That's an interesting thing, especially going to Europe and stuff and being
absolutely
a sensation. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, I definitely was preparing for everything. I mean, it's a dream of mine to be a solo artist. And I knew going into Pussycat Dolls, Nicole was the lead singer. I learned a lot from her. I learned a lot from all the girls. It was kind of like boot camp for me, you know, and I took all the experiences and it made me into a really strong person and a strong artist. So, yeah, I think it was incredible. It definitely learned everything for that, for my solo career now.
So educate me, did the Pussycat Dolls in your career with them ever really make it as big in the U.S.? Because, again, this is me, Mr. Non-Pop Culture in some areas, especially in music. Because, I mean, I know you guys are a household name, Pussycat Dolls. Trust me, I do know that. But when the time that you were a success, I think I was still – I got to think of the years. I think I was pretty much finishing up my pro wrestling career and was pretty much not always into specific things. I was in the minor leagues of pro wrestling, but still wrestled in the WWF a couple times. So, but really, so I understand the whole entertainment thing, but not to this extreme. But in the U.S., did you think that the people who created them thought they maybe would have been more of a success in the U.S.? What is your thoughts on that, Jessica?
I think it was what it was supposed to be everywhere around the world. I mean, I think maybe if we fit together, it probably would have been bigger in the U.S., but who knows? I mean, we'll never know, you know, but we did make a stand here. The music is still you know, people still love it, and it's great memories for people. So that's all that really matters to me.
So you took a leap of faith to go on your own, especially when you said you still needed to have some more training to be a vocal artist, meaning to be able to do your own thing. So once you were ready to make that step, did you have a team that really wanted to help you in this process to make this transition?
Absolutely. I think your team is the most important, I feel like, in the business. You're only as good as your team, as Rihanna says, as she won an award last year, you know, and that's so true. I had an amazing support team, and I had an amazing vocal teacher that I saw almost every day, and tons of money towards it, but it was worth every penny because, you know, as an artist, singing is very vulnerable, especially when you come from a family where your father told you you can't sing.
Oh,
I had that battle going into it, you know, but I overcame it, and I proved him wrong, and here I am, you know. So for me, I like to be underestimated and prove people wrong a lot.
Now,
it gives me fire, you know.
But it seemed like to get professionally trained as a singer, it was a longer process, later in your career. You were trained at times, but not to this point. So always, my daughter shows that talent. I have 5 kids, but my oldest really is a great singer. And I want to get her voice lessons and get her, she's in the choir and already in 4th grade and able to be the cantor. Really, big booming voice for such a small girl. What would your advice be for her and what to do? Because I see some tremendous talent. I'm very good at judging talent, just I guess because of being a performer myself. What is your take? Because it seemed like you were a late bloomer, but it didn't matter because of all of the experiences you got in other things to help you perform. What would be your recommendation for her? I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I feel like that the new generation is so talented. It's unbelievable. And there's so much access to the internet to learn and grow. My advice to her would be learn every single day and grow every single day and don't get discouraged and don't give up. And don't listen to anyone's bad, you know, advice. Always take it as constructive criticism and apply it to your career and to your life and to your art. Because that's what makes you stronger and that's what makes you better. Like, I wouldn't be here today if my dance teachers were all nice to me. You know, they were mean. But I needed that training because it's not personal. It's about they wanted me to be the best I could be. And thank God they did that because I probably wouldn't be in the Pussycats, all of you where I'm at right now, if it weren't for them, you know? So I think it's just about not giving up and having the right team around you.
That's so true. Okay, so once your recording, your single career started, tell us specifically what was your favorite highlight so far of it? What would you say? Now being
well, my
on
first,
your, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I was doing, during the Pussycats, I was developing as an artist with DJs, and I was featured on a call that Paul Van Dyke's song called White Lies. So I did a ton of, like, Ultra and festivals and, you know, I was traveling and doing that. So I developed my voice during that. But one of the highlights in my solo career is when I got my number one for Show Me when I was signed to Hollywood Records. And I pulled over on Hollywood Boulevard and my A&R called me. They have great news. You know, you were number one. And it was just such a pinnacle moment in my life. As I was like, okay, it was a very hard decision to leave the Pussycat Dolls. But at that moment, I knew, you know what, I know I'm on the right track. You know, I know this is meant to be, and I know I can do it. So that was a pinnacle for me.
Well, definitely, to be number one, and to be in the U.S. number one. So, wow, I'm sure your life even changed more, how people recognized you in the United States and all this stuff. It must have been wild, right? So real with your fans.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was great. And, you know, it's great when I do shows in the United States. Like, I want to make my mark in the United States. That's my ultimate goal. And it's very difficult, but That's my ultimate plan right now, you know.
And you see, but you see that the way music's changed, it's not just the U.S. anymore. It's the entire world.
No, well,
yeah, it's global.
Yeah, you have the internet. You have the accessibility to be around everywhere. I mean, my fans are in Brazil, they're in China, they're in Europe, they're everywhere, you know. And I talk to them all the time. And I mean, the internet has absolutely changed the music industry in so many ways. But it's so good for the artists to just connect with everybody.
Right, and that global aspect of knowing you're going to be traveling a lot of places to go to do concerts, right?
I did a show in Russia, like, in a little town called Chilivank. And it was maybe, like, you know, it was a very small town, and it took us 2 plane rides to get there, 19-hour ride and all this, but it was so worth it, because when I got there, it was, you know, the fans really appreciated it, and they enjoyed themselves in the show, you know, so I liked it. I liked being able to travel around the world.
So tell us your latest projects. What's going on with you right now, Jessica, for your fans to check out, and also people that maybe not heard your music?
Absolutely. Well, I just I have a new release coming out on May 16th on my birthday.
All right.
My new song called Let It Be Love, featuring Rico Love, and we're shooting a video for it in the next couple weeks. So I'm very excited about that. And we're finishing up my album called Feeling Resurrection, which should be out in September. I'm really excited because it's a side of me that no one's ever seen. And I was really able to grow and heal and love in the process of making this album. So I'm really excited for people to hear it.
Well, it definitely sounds like you're excited and you're ready to roll. It's like, wow, what it's so real type of opportunities. And what is you think is your ultimate goal? Are you doing any acting anymore, or are you just really sticking just to the recording?
Oh, man. I want to put people through by acting. My acting is terrible. But I am a performer, though. I can say that. You know, the overall through line in my music is love. That's the whole thing with my album, and my whole purpose, I feel like someone asked me, like, "What? Why do you do this?" And the truth is to spread love and to make people feel good and to heal. You know, a big part of like my platform as a solo artist is it's equality for all human beings. You know, equality for marriage. So, you know, for me, I feel like being of service in this business is the most important. But for me, that's what I want to do. But that's my goal.
All right. Well, fantastic. Where's the best place we can find information on you, Jessica? Learn more about you, listen to your music, and check out all what's the best place to go?
Well, we got SoundCloud, we got Facebook and Twitter and everything. For Twitter, it's I am Jessica Setta. For Facebook, it's Jessica Setta. SoundCloud is Jessica Setta as well. And Instagram. I mean, it's all over the place. you can definitely keep in touch with me on all my socials.
Well, definitely for sure, Jessica. Best of luck with everything. And again, your story really encourages a lot of people to not give up and keep going.
Don't give up
and keep going. And you're going to continue to go up the ladder for sure in different ways, because you're definitely have had success, and you'll continue to have success in your career. And I see you the kind of person who wants to perform for a long time. I can tell. I can see you as one that's saying, I want to do this because I love the stage. I love performing.
And
want to continue to do it. And that's fantastic. So thanks again for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Jessica. Thanks for calling.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. I'm just excited as can be about the great guests when I get to tape for 2 hours, and every week, the Neil Haley Show. And starting out, I have a really interesting guest. I always want to thank Triumph Books. They're the best sports books out there, and I learned so much about different authors, but I want to welcome the program author Bob Duth. He's the author of 100 Things the Red Wings Should Do, Know, and Do Before They Die. Bob, thanks for calling, and I'm always interested in having a conversation with sports authors, but thanks again for calling, Bob.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I tell you, let's start off with basically one thing to mention in this book. Now, the Red Wings and the Penguins, I'm sure that it maybe didn't make it into the 100 things, was the Penguins' big win against the Red Wings. I had to bring that up for our Pittsburgh fans. Did it?
No, I don't think that made it on the list. Watching the Wings lose the Stanley Cup isn't one of the 100 things that I think a Red Wings fan wants to do. But there is one unique little item with a Pittsburgh connection. For years, Paul McCartney on his acoustic guitar had a Red Wings logo. And the reason that happened was he played at Olympia Stadium when he was in the band Wings, and Olympia Stadium usher gave him a Red Wings logo at the end of the concert, and he affixed it to his guitar. Well, many years later, it just happened that Paul was one of the first acts, I believe maybe even the first act, to play a concert at the Console Energy Center. And when the Pittsburgh people saw that Red Wings logo on his acoustic guitar, they gave him a Penguins logo. So now the two of them sit side by side on his guitar.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And we all know the success that the Red Wings have had in years, but what about the history of the Red Wings? I'm sure there's something in the 100 Things about specifically how this franchise got started, for sure.
Well, what's fascinating about them is they were granted a franchise when they didn't have an arena. They had guaranteed that Olympia Stadium would be built, but as it turned out, they were a year behind schedule. So the 1926-27 season, the team was then known as the Detroit Cougars, because what had happened was there was a major pro league in Western Canada, and a team called the Victoria Cougars in that league. Well, to fill out their roster that first season, the owners of the Detroit franchise simply bought the majority of the Cougars roster and decided to keep the name. So that's why they started out as the Cougars. They figured with the Lions, you know, with the Tigers already in town, and then eventually the Lions would come along, that whole cat theme was something that seemed to fit Detroit. But anyway, since they didn't have an arena, there was no other arena in the Detroit area that they could use. And they actually had to practice outdoors on occasion that first season, because the only ice available in the Michigan area was outdoor rinks. So they ended up playing their entire home schedule that first season across the border in Canada in Windsor, Ontario, at the Windsor Arena, which still stands in downtown. And so they are the only North American major professional franchise to ever play its entire home schedule in a foreign country.
Oh, my. Wow. Now, who would you think was the best ever Red Wing, in your opinion? Who would you say?
I think you have to go with Gordie Howe. I mean, the man could do everything. If you needed a goal, he'd score a goal. If you needed a playmaker, he could do that. If somebody needed to be straightened out, he could take care of that. And in a pinch, and he did many times, played defense for the Red Wings. I just, a dominant all-around player and the best player in the NHL for almost all of his career. And the guy played 26 years in the NHL. And people always ask me what I think Gordie Howe's greatest feat was. And I think, to me, it was when he came back with the Hartford Whalers in the NHL in the 79-80 season and scored 16 goals at the age of 52. And you think about this season, how many guys in their prime are not going to get 16 goals? I mean, that just shows you what an incredible genetic specimen Gordie Howe was.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I wanted to discuss today, and it's kind of funny, I mean, I'm not going to say I have a huge knowledge of the Red Wings. I guess because our rivals are always the Flyers and the Rangers and different things, but all we can remember, you know, is that Stanley Cup. But the whole Russian invasion, and there was a 30-30 special on ESPN that really got involved at the end of the with the Tisov and things like that. Now, tell me specifically how this Russian group together won a cup and stuff. That was pretty amazing, some of the talent, right?
It was, and it kind of went against the grain of the NHL at that time. In the early to mid-90s was the era of, they call it the dead puck era, when everyone was playing the trap and trying to win games 2-1 and 1-0. And Scotty Bowman, probably the greatest coach in the history of hockey, was in charge of the Red Wings then. And he decided, no, we're not going to play that way. We're going to play up-tempo. We're going to play puck possession, and we're going to attack. And he put together this Russian unit. You know, they had got Sergei Fedorov in the draft and smuggled him out of the Goodwill games in Seattle in 1990 to get him to Detroit. He was the first one, and then the next year, when the walls started coming down and behind the Iron Curtain, they were able to get Vladimir Konstantinov and then Vyacheslav Kozlov out. And then he finished out the unit by probably bringing over the two greatest Russian players of that era and picking up Igor Larionov from San Jose and then Fetisov from New Jersey. And he played them as a Russian unit and played them, they played that Russian system of puck possession, and they were a dominant group. I mean, you had Yzerman and Shanahan on one line playing that old North American, North and South style and banging people around, and then you'd send out these tremendous skill players, and if you're a coach trying to defend that, you basically have to come up with two different systems to stop the same team.
you're not going to be able to do that. And I think that it went against the grain in so many ways, because you still have this group of people believe in the, you know, bang it out style of hockey that's not, you know, finesse, lots of goal scores. And that's what made Detroit exciting. And with that team, is they could score a lot of goals and were exciting. And then the offense was important. You know, you watch these close games that you don't see a lot of goal scores, but they wanted to really bring that European style, right? It sounds like Scotty did.
And then one of the things the players told me that they loved about Fetisov, I mean, this was a guy who was 40 years old at the time, and he would, in that era, the defensemen were basically trained to get it off the glass and get it out of the zone and to, you know, make the puck battle in the neutral zone. Well, Fetisov was old school, and his theory was make a pass, you know, a tape-to-tape pass, and he would take the hit to make that play. And the forwards appreciated him so much for that, because the game at that time, you know, the forwards were the ones taking the beating because, as I say, the puck was shot into the neutral zone and then the fight was on. And so by him making a tape-to-tape pass, they were moving their feet and they had the defense backpedaling. So it was not only took the battle out of the neutral zone, it forced the defensive team to backpedal and not play the trap.
Exactly. And one of the things you met in the 100 things is why Chelios is the greatest born American player. You made that case. Tell us about that, Chris Chelios.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you ask any American player of the last 20, 25 years, they all bow in reverence to Chelios. He's the king as far as they're concerned. And I think as much as it's about talent, it's about leadership. I mean, Chelios, you know, has similar qualities to Gordie Howe. He was able to excel in the NHL for over 2 decades and, you know, just was a dominant player and, you know, a guy who was probably, if not the most hated visiting player in Detroit when he was a Blackhawks, certainly in the top two. And when he came here, it was kind of like, I don't know, it would be like, I'm trying to think of like Claude Lemieux almost coming to the Red Wings. I mean, this guy was reviled in Detroit and he admitted that. It's funny, he wrote a book himself, and he was telling me he was doing a book signing, and he said, so many people come up to me and tell me how much they hated him. And he said, well, that's okay. I hated you guys just as much.
Well, again, we're talking to Bob Deff, author of 100 Things the Red Wings Should Know and Do Before They Die. And I think that when you were asked to be part of this book, it was pretty cool because you think about specifically coming up with 100 things with this storied franchise that's the Red Wings. That was must have been fun kind of working with your co-author to come up with those 100 things, wasn't it?
And there's so many unique things with the Detroit franchise that have never happened to other teams. They had a player their first season by the name of Jim Riley, who I'm sure 99% of hockey fans have never heard of. Well, Jim Riley was the only and remains, of course, the only player to play in the NHL and also play Major League Baseball.
Oh, really? Wow.
And he played for the Washington Senators and St. Louis Browns and also played in the NHL with the Red Wings and the Blackhawks. So he's the only guy that's ever done that, you know. Another thing I found that was kind of fun was Tom Matte. You'll probably remember the old Baltimore Colts running back.
Yeah, and, I've interviewed him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, his dad actually played for Detroit in the 29-30 season. And I called Tom and asked him about it. And Tom actually had some memories of his dad at the end of his career. He played mostly in the minor leagues. And Tom told me that hockey was the sport he would have loved to have played, but it just... Growing up where in Ohio, it just wasn't a big sport then, and he ended up gravitating to football. But he actually played a lot of hockey. His mom was Canadian, and there was that real, hockey roots in his bloodstream. He played, told me he played some club hockey at Ohio State. And then when he was with the Colts, there was actually, he used to skate with the Baltimore Clippers, the old AHL team.
Oh, my.
And there was a plan afoot to have him suit up for a game because Clippers are thinking, geez, if we put a Colt in the lineup, we'll pack this place. And when Carol Rosenblum, who was the owner of the Colts at the time, got wind of it, he said, absolutely not.
Interesting, for sure. What would you say would be your favorite of the 100 things that kind of you discovered through research and stuff like that?
Well, probably, again, one that a lot of people don't know about, but I mean, fascinating. It was like a real-life version of the longest yard in 1953-54 season. The Red Wings traveled to Marquette State Prison and played a game against the convicts. And Marquette State Prison is not white collar crime. We're talking about murderers, armed robbers. These are hardcore criminals, you know. And to do that, and it was kind of a fluky thing. They used to do barnstorming tours through northern Michigan and that in the summer to promote the team. And Jack Adams and Ted Lindsay were in Marquette, and this fella came up to them, who was the warden at the prison, and told them about this great athletic program they had and how they had this wonderful outdoor rink and in the yard, and they had a prison league, and they were really proud of how they were rehabilitating these guys through sports. And he said, you know, it would be wonderful if you guys came and played a game. And Adams, thinking there was no way this would ever happen, said, okay, here's what you need to do. He said, you got to pay our way there. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to guarantee this. And he gave him all these outrageous demands, thinking he'd never hear from the guy again. And sure enough, a couple months later, yeah, it's all set. And Adams said, no, I'm a man of my word. We got to go.
That's fantastic,
And they would go on to win the Stanley Cup that year. So, I mean, you're the Stanley Cup champions into a prison against hardcore criminals.
That's cool. And, again, the 100 things the Red Wigs should know and do before they die. You can find information at Triumph Books and also other places. Bob, do you have any place for to find information on you? Or you can go?
Oh, I have my own blog, Duffer's Dabbles, on the Windsor Storm website. That's got a bio of me. You can follow me on Twitter at Ask the Duffer.
All right. Well, fantastic, Bob. I enjoyed the discussion. Learned something new about the Red Wings, but you liked how I was able to throw in that penguin dig at the beginning of the interview. But I really learned a lot, and best of luck to you, and best success on the book. So thanks again for calling, Bob.
Oh, you're always welcome.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Back to you.
Bye-bye. You're watching the Neil Haley Show Author's Corner segment, and when we get back, another exciting guest. We'll be back in just a moment.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, Neil Haley. And it's always interesting, all the different celebrity guests we have in the program, and anyone, it's interesting to talk about something with parenting, but she has a lot of cool projects. I'm excited to welcome the program Marissa Silver from Bravo's Extreme Guide to Parenting. Marissa, thanks for calling. And Marissa, how are you? And life has certainly changed after doing that show, hasn't it?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on. Life has been incredible before, and it's incredible after the show. Thank you.
And so from that point on, you have so many other ventures through that process, but also I understand your son that was on the show with you is an actor, isn't he?
Yes, my son's been acting for 3 years, and the show definitely opened up a lot of doors. I think the day after the show, we had so many agents and managers calling us. I didn't even know where to start. We changed his manager. We changed his agent, and he's doing film festivals, and he's doing movies, and he's doing print work. He's going to be 6 and a half, and he actually loves the field. He loves it so much.
Interesting. So getting the opportunity to see him and put that on his, calling card, I was on this show, people then get to say, okay, he's interesting, entertaining, more opportunities for him. And that's very, very good. And the same thing has happened to you as well after the show, right? You said doors were opening up before, but tell us specifically what you're doing.
Well, for me, as you know, I'm a chiropractor and I'm a wellness coach. And I do yoga, I do Pilates, I own a really big health club in Long Island, and I think I was unaware of all the local soap opera and the celebrities that live in Long Island. They all reached out to me very privately. A lot of them had their PR people call me, and because I own a gym and I've been personal training for over 20 years, I overnight became the personal trainer for a lot of these local celebrities who have to get in shape for movies or TVs or for roles or for concerts and tours. And they've all turned to me to be their local trainer. So overnight, my whole branding has changed. It's been absolutely fantastic for me.
Well, yeah, anytime you get these opportunities, Marissa, you got to jump on it. And especially with your as an entrepreneur and your business is successful, but then now new clientele means more opportunities, more everything. So that's fantastic. And you also have a book as well, right, Marissa?
Yes, well, I have a bunch of books that are available on Amazon.com, but I had recently was approached by a wonderful woman. Her name is Montre Adams, and the book is called Just do your dream. I had gone to performing arts high school, which many people don't know. And so acting and singing and musical theater was always a love of mine. But then real life sets in, unfortunately, and I went to pursuit of medicine. But I always missed and wished all the acting classes and the experience I had. So about 10 or so years ago, I started doing modeling again and acting again, and this woman decided to put me in her book. It's about reliving your dreams again, and she has a whole chapter on me and my acting career. And again, it's going to be in the bookstores very soon. Right now, I believe she has an online edition. And from there, I've been doing a lot of public speaking about people fulfilling their dreams. And I've had a lot of local bookstores have asked me to speak to other people about when you were a child and you wanted to do something, and unfortunately, real life gets in the way. Life is short. This is not a dress rehearsal. And it's wonderful if you can go back to your first love, which was, for me, was acting and performing.
And so your son's doing it, and you're doing it as well, which is cool.
And
you
like it. Yeah. My husband is getting into it, too. The two of them were just filming this weekend for New York University, and they're both going to be in some of their films, which are going to be in some of the Long Island and the Manhattan Film Festival. So now my husband's getting into the picture, too. And that's all because of Bravo. I think he loved the cameras. He had such a great time.
And so being on the set, he's like, I'm into this as well. And he never did acting before, right? No.
He said, lights, camera, action. I love it. Count me in.
Well, and what are your goals for your son? Do you think he's going to be a great actor? Do you think you can get him opportunities?
My son, this past weekend, he did two short films. He gets tons of phone calls. He is in kindergarten, so we don't want him to miss too much school. But he actually loves it, and when he's on the set, a lot of the directors will approach me, and they cannot get over his memorization skills. And he's a beautiful little boy, and he actually loves it. They've spoken to him and said, are you here because your mother wants you to be here? He said, no, I love it. In fact, if I have a Skype interview and he doesn't, he gets upset. And he tells the person on the screen, what about me? I want you to interview me. So the next thing you know, they're going to write him a role because I love him so much. So I definitely think he has the gift, which is wonderful. Let him enjoy his life.
Do you ever see him, you guys going to L.A.? Because that's the next step, right?
Well, after the show aired, yes, I got a lot of Twitter responses from a lot of production people and managers and agents telling us to come out to L.A. for a few auditions and tapings. We never made it out there. But when we do go, I do have a lot of people to contact. They fell in love with him. Well, they really did.
He's got a look at Disney and Nickelodeon. I had a star from.
Oh, yes. Did you have any contact? Call me up.
No, I have connections to different people. I just interviewed a star from Bella and the Bulldogs today. The show's on Nickelodeon. It's pretty popular show, Haley Chu. So it's interesting, all the different things. But these kids, what they basically get hooked up with Disney, and then also get hooked up with Nickelodeon, and then they get the deals with ABC after that, how it works. So I think ultimately, I know you maybe have to expand your business to LA. I think that's the next step.
Okay. You
know, yeah.
Tomorrow. That's okay. I'll go. I have a lot of contacts out there. I'll go. I'll sleep on the beach. I don't mind.
Well, that's the fun part about all this. And kind of talking about your parenting, not from the show per se, but your parenting that really, truly makes you with your son, and especially, you know, having him, you know, doing the acting.
When he shines, I shine. I can't even express to you how much I adore and love this little boy. Wherever I go, when I'm in his kindergarten class and they'll ask me to read for the class and I bring in treats, the teachers always say to me, you're such a good mother. I just connect with the kids. If I was going to do this all over again, I actually spoke to his teacher yesterday, I would have been a kindergarten teacher. I can't tell you how much I love the kids. I love to make him smile. I love to tickle him. I love to make him laugh. The problem is he knows it. So he knows how to manipulate me. It's my husband that is really the strict one in the house, but it's bad because I'm very old school. I tend to say to him, wait until your father comes home, which I know is the worst thing to say because then he walks all over me. But it's a pattern that I think my mother used to say, just wait until your father comes home. So he's sort of scared of my husband. Me, he knows he owns my heart and he can do whatever he wants.
Well, that's important. And definitely people can check out still your experience when you did this for sure as well by like searching different things from your experience on Bravo's show for people.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And then people can always contact me. I do a lot of local speaking about parenting, and all the parents here know me and they know who I am. We're invited to all the parties, and my son has loads of friends. People can always contact me at my website, which is bodybysilver.com, or they can email me through my website, drsilver@bodybysilver.com. And I'm always available to speak to others about parenting, exercise, nutrition, wellness coaches. I have loads of degrees, and I don't mind using them.
Well, I think you're enjoying this, and keep the ride going. And I'm sure you're looking at other projects that you can't say that are happening that could possibly happen. So best of luck in all those ventures, and let me know specifically when any new news comes, especially about your son or different things. But I would really make that call to really start trying to do a lot more. New York's a good place to do acting, but ultimately got to go to LA. But make those connections and spend some time in LA because that's where he's going to get the best chances. And the acting classes and really to be in LA is the way to make it for sure. But thanks for calling again, Marissa, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay,
bye-bye.
You listen to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.